We're studying in the 19th chapter of 1 Samuel, and in the earlier part of this chapter, we read of three attempts upon David's life by Saul, and three escapes. The first time he was able to escape from death by the wisdom and good actions of Jonathan, his friend, Saul's son. The second time he was able to escape when Saul threw the javelin at him by his own quick movements and fast action. The third time he was able to escape when his wife, Michal, warned him of Saul's men and let him down through a window so that he could escape out of his own house and flee from the messengers whom Saul had sent to do him harm. Now we find, beginning in the 18th verse, that after he leaves his house, that he goes to Ramah to find Samuel. So David fled and escaped and came to Samuel to Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went out and dwelt in Naioth. Now there's several reasons why David might have fled to Samuel. First of all, he has to be at this time having a great doubt that he is going to be king. Having a great doubt that he really has been appointed to be king. However, Samuel is the one who anointed him. Samuel is the one who assured him that he would be king. And so it's only natural then to go back to Samuel to reassure this promise of being king, to renew this thing. Secondly, Samuel was a man of God, and certainly it was very appropriate to go to him so that he could give further counsel as to what David should do. I'm sure David had a very great wonderment in his mind as to what his next action should be. Where should he go? What was the will of God for him at this time? Should he keep on running? Should he fight back? Should he just simply disappear from view so that he wouldn't have all this great pressure of Saul upon him in his attempts to put him to death? And thirdly, Samuel was at a place where there was a college of prophets, and they were engaged in the activity of praising God. They were prophesying. They were performing some kind of worship to God. And of course, this was a very beneficial activity for David to also engage himself in. In Psalm 116, verse 11, David said, "I said in my haste, all men are liars." And it's thought by some that he was referring to this very time here when he said that. Because at this time, Saul had promised him that he wouldn't be his enemy anymore. He'd made an agreement with him that things were going to be all right. And Saul had gone back on his promise. At this time, Samuel had told him he was going to be king, that he was intended by God to be appointed king, and it seems that that wasn't going to come to pass. So David had reason to believe that all men are liars. That is, these great promises made to him weren't going to be brought about. So we have here David fleeing for his life in a state of great mental distress. It is thought also that he might have written Psalm 27 at this very time. And we'd like to read from Psalm 27, beginning with the 5th verse. "For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up on a rock. And now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me, and answer me. When thou saidest, Seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee, Thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I had fainted, unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he will strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." So that's a reading from the 27th Psalm. And David seems to be following out the injunction, the instruction that would be given in that psalm as he goes to Samuel here in Ramah. And this place called Naioth was a place where there was a school of prophets. And so Samuel and David went to this place. And it was told Saul, saying, Behold, David is at Naioth in Ramah. So Saul had some spies, some persons who relayed the message to him that David had fled to this point, that David is with Samuel. And verse 20 says, And Saul sent messengers to take David. And when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as appointed over them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. So those that came to take David, those that were sent by Saul to capture him and bring him back to Saul, when they got to this place, they too were overcome by the Spirit of God. They were caught up in this prophesying that was going on, this worship to God that was being carried out by Samuel and the school of prophets and by David. And so then they also prophesied, and the Spirit of God came upon them. And when it was told Saul, he sent other messengers, and they prophesied likewise. And Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied also. So everyone that Saul sent over here to take David, they were each one caught up by the Spirit of the Lord, so that they had a change of mind. They joined in the worship and in the prophesying that was being done at this place, and so they did not carry out the instruction to take David. David was spared each time. Verse 22, Then went he also to Ramah. Now this is Saul. Saul decides he'll just go himself. Now this was an undignified thing for a king to do, but he saw that none of his messengers were going to be able to carry out his instructions against David. He was thwarted on every hand. Providence seemed to step in and intervene any time that he planned something against David. So now he himself comes. He went also to Ramah, and came to a great well that is in Sichu. And he asked and said, Where are Samuel and David? And one said, Behold, they be at Naioth in Ramah. And he went thither to Naioth in Ramah, and the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Naioth in Ramah. So before Saul even got there, he also had the Spirit of God come upon him. He also began to prophesy. He fell into the spirit of things like the others did, so that he was then indisposed so far as being able to take any action against David. His mind at this time couldn't concentrate upon the hatred and the envy and jealousy that he had toward David. His purpose in coming there to take David or to do him harm was thus thwarted by the intervention of the Spirit of God. Verse 24, And he stripped off his clothes also, and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Now what the Bible scholars think this means is that he took off his armament, the weapons, and the warlike garments that he might have had on, as well as his royal robe, and became as one of those in that place as far as his dress was concerned, and he prophesied there with the rest. Wherefore they say, Is Saul also among the prophets? Now this was a saying that had begun back in the early career of Saul, when he prophesied another time with the school of prophets. It was thought most unusual for Saul to do that at that time, and here again it's most unusual for him to do it this time. But we see that God is using his methods, his ways, to thwart the efforts of Saul to bring about harm to David. David is given here a period of rest. He's given here a time of peace and respite from his enemies. And so this is a way that God has chosen to bring this about. And we learn from this that many are the ways that God has to bring about deliverance of his people whenever they are faced with a danger. And that concludes the 19th chapter of 1 Samuel. Now we're ready to begin the 20th chapter. Well, David had just had four narrow escapes from death. So he is beginning to have to consider very strongly now, what is he going to have to do? What kind of measures must he take for his own safety? Must he go hide? Must he take up arms against Saul? Must he get other defensive or offensive means to protect himself? And so we find in the first verse, And David fled from Naioth and Ramah, and came and said before Jonathan, What have I done? What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life? So while Saul was still in this trance at Naioth, while his mind was preoccupied and overpowered with the Spirit of God, David fled from Naioth. And apparently he went back to the court where Jonathan was. And so he begins to inquire with Jonathan. Jonathan is his close friend. Jonathan also is in a very good position to know what's going on in the mind of his father in the very innermost areas of the kingdom. And so he asked Jonathan, "What have I done? What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father that he seeketh my life? Just why is this all being brought about, Jonathan? Can you give me a reason for what is happening? If I'm wrong, let me know. If I stand to make a correction, tell me about it. Why is my life in jeopardy? Why does your father have such a terrible preoccupation with wanting to bring about my death?" Now, it seemed that Jonathan wasn't really aware of all these efforts that God was making to bring about David's death. And we've seen in the previous chapter where David has had four narrow escapes, and Jonathan was instrumental in one of those, but at that time he seemed to have made peace between Saul and David, and he may still be under the illusion that Saul still is holding to his oath and that he continues to want to do David no harm. For he says in the second verse, "And he said unto him, God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it me." So Jonathan uses this kind of reasoning. Whatever my father's going to do, he's going to tell me about it. He didn't do anything great or small without telling me about it. So I don't know anything about this. You're not going to die. And he further says, "And why should my father hide this thing from me? Is it not so?" And this is his reasoning. There's no reason for him to hide this from me. He'll tell me if he wants to do you some harm. And up to this point, I have no information to that effect. Nothing's going to happen to you. You're going to be safe, David. And so David uses some very strong reasoning to change Jonathan's mind. Verse 3, "And David sware moreover and said, Thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes. And he saith, Let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved." So here's David's reasoning. Your father knows how you feel about me. He knows that we're the best of friends. He knows that we have a covenant between us. He knows that our souls are as one. And so he's not going to tell you this thing, Jonathan. And the reason he's not going to tell you is because if you find it out, you're going to be grieved. You're going to be upset. You're going to try to bring about some measures to thwart him, because he knows you're not going to stand idly by and let him take my life. So he's not going to tell you. He's not going to confide in you what his true feelings are about me. And David makes an oath here. He says, "But truly as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth." Now here are two things that would be very great proofs to Jonathan. As the Lord liveth. This thing is a fact in itself that cannot be refuted. There is a God, and he does live. And then as thy soul liveth. Surely Jonathan is aware of the fact that he has a soul, and that his soul is alive. And so by these two things, David makes an oath. As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death. I'm just a step away from death. The next corner I turn, I could be brought to death. The next time I lay down to go to sleep, I could be killed. The next time I encounter your father for any reason, he could slay me. He's thrown the javelin at me twice. He has sent his men after me several times. I narrowly escaped one time of being let out the window. And so you know for a fact that I'm very close to death. And David confirms this to Jonathan by the oath that he takes. "Then said Jonathan unto David, Whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee." So it seems that Jonathan is now convinced. Yes, David, it does seem to be correct. Maybe you are right. Maybe your life is in danger. What can I do to help? Whatever your soul desireth, I'll do it for you. What's your plan? Count me in on it. I want to help. So we see now where David outlines his plan to Jonathan. This is the way he's going to find out just how Saul really feels at this particular moment about him. "And David said unto Jonathan, Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I will not fail to sit with the king at meat." Now, here was a feast day coming up. And at the great feast day, the king, although he was not in true service to God, he had to make an appearance before the people. He had to keep up the outward appearance as though he were faithful to God. So he would keep this feast, and he would keep it in such a manner that either all of his children would be seated with him at the table and participate in the feast with him, or all of his army commanders would be there. And in either case, this would include David. David was married to his daughter, David was his son-in-law, and David was also one of his army leaders. And so David said, I should not fail to sit with the king at meat. I'll be due to be there. There'll be a place for me at that table. And Saul will be expecting me to be there at that place. But he further says to Jonathan, But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field unto the third day at even. Now, apparently this feast was going to last 2 or 3 days. And so David is going to be absent for that length of time. He was going to hide out in the field so that he would not be present at the feast. He'd obviously not be there, and Saul would miss him. And then he says, If thy father at all miss me, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me that he might run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. Now, this could very well have been true, what David said. It is quite likely that his family did have a yearly sacrifice at this time. And it is quite likely that he was invited there by his brothers to come and participate in that. So he's not telling Saul a lie. He's telling him something that is well in the realm of probability. But Saul was to be told this to see what his reaction would be. He says, If he say thus, it is well, thy servant shall have peace. So if Saul says, Okay, that's fine. I understand that David has a good reason for not being here. That's fine. We will excuse him. And if he seems to be in a good frame of mind about it, then he says, I'll have peace. That's all right. It means that Saul is not really so mad at me after all. But if he be very wroth, then be sure that evil is determined by him. If Saul is very greatly upset because I'm not there, if he's mad, if he's wroth at my absence, then you're going to know that evil is determined by him. He wants me to be there. He wants me to be in close proximity to him so he can take advantage of the situation and do me damage. He wants to kill me. Verse 8. Therefore thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant, for thou hast brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord with thee. So he reminds Jonathan of the fact that we have a covenant, that we have an agreement that we made earlier. And this covenant binds us together. And he, as he reminds Jonathan of this, he says, Thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant. Be good to me. Be kind to me. I need help. I'm at your mercy right now. And remember that in all your dealings here. Notwithstanding, if there be in me iniquity, slay me thyself. For why should thou bring me to thy father? And so he further tells Jonathan that if I really do have a just reason to be put to death, if you can be made to believe that your father is justified in seeking my life, and you know that there's something bad about me, go ahead and slay me yourself. Don't wait for your father to do it. You take matters into your own hands and do it right now. But if you're convinced that I am innocent, if you're convinced that I have no reason to die, if you're convinced that I am not guilty of some sin that's worthy of death, then be kind to me. Be merciful to me. Remember our covenant and really try to help me. And Jonathan's response in verse 9, And Jonathan said, Far be it from thee. For if I knew certainly that evil were determined by my father to come upon thee, then would I not tell thee? He said, You can trust me. You can count upon me. I truly am going to follow after our covenant. I am a true friend, David. If I know certainly that my father's going to do you some harm, if I can find this thing out, if I can prove it to myself and convince myself that it is going to happen, then I'll tell you. I'll not keep it from you. You're going to find out all that I know about this. And as for the idea that I think that there's some justifiable reason for you to be put to death, the very thought that I might think that you're guilty and that I might think that my father is justified in this, he says, be it far from thee. I don't think there's any reason for you to have anything bad happen to you, and I certainly am not going to be the one to bring about any bad to you. So just put that out of your mind, David. And then verse 10, Then said David to Jonathan, Who shall tell me? Or what if thy father answer thee roughly? And so David puts it to him like this. Well, what if your father turns on you, Jonathan? What if he starts talking to you and giving you some threats? What if he sees what you're doing and he decides you're working against him? And so he decides to put you in the same category with me and make an enemy out of you. Then who's going to tell me? Are you going to still be just as true to me as ever, even though it causes your father to turn against you? What if thy father answer thee roughly? So you can see how that David is really getting down to the basics about their agreement. David is wanting to leave no stone unturned towards having Jonathan to truly be in agreement with him. And so verse 11, Jonathan said unto David, "Come, let us go out into the field." And they went out, both of them, into the field. So here Jonathan asked David to go out into the field with him so that they can again renew their agreement, so that they can have a long, confidential talk, so that they can really settle this matter once and for all, so that he'll put out of David's mind any fears, any doubts that David may have about Jonathan's loyalty and fidelity. So they go out into the field, both of them, in order to settle this matter. Verse 12, "And Jonathan said unto David, O Lord God of Israel, when I sounded my father about tomorrow any time, or the third day, and behold, if there be good toward David, and I then sin not unto thee, show it thee." There seems to be a word or a phrase left out of this verse in order for it to make good sense. But what seems to happen here is that Jonathan is making an oath, and he is calling upon God to be a witness here, that if he doesn't do the right thing, if he does find out that there is some information that needs to be given to David, and that he does not give it to David, then he wants to be put into jeopardy. He says in verse 13, "The Lord do so, and much more to Jonathan." So Jonathan holds back something. If he doesn't do the good thing toward David, then he implores that God do the same to him, do bad to him. But he further says in verse 13, "But if it please my father to do the evil, then I will show it thee and send thee away, that thou mayest go in peace. And the Lord be with thee, as he hath been with my father." So Jonathan here again affirms his friendship, his loyalty. He says, "I'm going to do the right thing, and I call upon God to be my witness for this." Our time for today's study has run out. So till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.